Ancient Warfare. Background to Marathon Part 3. Persian Archer Effectiveness. This is another discussion in the piece about the attack on the by the Athenians on the Persians and their casualty numbers. So we're going to look at the missiles this time. Oddly enough, when it came to Persian missile fire, and by the way, missile fire in the ancient world is basically javelin, spear, you know, arrow type of thing. You could also put, if you're firing, slings and things like that. But we're really talking about arrows here at this point. Persian missile fire, in this case, using arrows that the ancient Greeks weren't really that concerned about. And this might seem odd for several reasons. First of all, Persian standard tactics had a large number of archers to unleash a barrage after barrage of arrows in their battles against almost all of their opponents. And this appeared to be very effective. But it wasn't as effective against the Greeks, mainly because of their armor. Now, the rebel losses in the Ionian Revolt were due to being outnumbered and flanked as a result of having thinned ranks, because instead of having them their normal 8 men deep, in some cases they were 4, in some cases they were 5, and the Persian army was much larger, which allowed them to flank them. Also, even with the armor the Greeks had at Marathon, they chose to close with the Persians as fast as possible. That's simply to make sure that the missile fire doesn't get any more effective. If the Greek hoplite was outfitted with a full armor, and that would mean that only about 6% of his total body area was uncovered, and most of these areas didn't have any major organs. For example, your arms. You're going to have completely exposed arms. You're not going to have gloves on. You may have bracelets or of some sort on the wrists, but they're not going to have full greaves like you have in the Middle Ages. So that's open. The face is open. In some cases, the throat is open. And you would have your legs between the knees and the upper thigh that would be open. So, you know, those are the main areas. In recreated tests, both broadhead and narrow-tipped arrows were fired in the replica Greek linothorax cuirassiers, or cuirasses. This would be either linen or leather. The range that they were fired at was 25 meters. The modern bow with a 55-pound pull weight or draw weight, which is actually greater than that of the ancient Persian bow, most of the arrows, if they penetrated at all, went in only about 1 or 2 millimeters. Of course, the curved surface of a bronze plate cuirass was even more effective. In 1977, the University of Reading recreation by Professor Blythe concluded that the charge of over 200 meters in full hoplite armor would have taken as long as 70 seconds. Charge at a trot, not a full run, to maintain their line formation of the phalanx. You don't want to break it up. You've heard this any number of times in movies and everything else. Keep the line. Hold the line so that you get maximum power when you hit the enemy's position. Now, the tests done in 1976 showed that there were about 5,000 Persian archers at Marathon. That's the estimate. If they fired at a slow pace, and a slow pace I think is really a creepingly slow pace, one arrow every 14 seconds. Now, the English longbowman can fire one, one every 5 or 6 seconds. The Huns can certainly fire that pace, if not a little faster. So, you know, that's a little slow. That would have meant that each Persian bowman would lose at least 5 shots during the Greek charge. Or if you're doing one shot every 10 seconds, that would be 7 shots. And I still think they're going to fire more than that, but they didn't test it at any other distance. That would mean that the Persians fired 25,000 to 35,000 arrows at the 10,000 attacking Athenians. That's a lot of arrows. But you remember at Agincourt, the English longbowmen, in their first volley, loosed 6,000 arrows, And at the pace that they're firing one every 5 or 6 seconds, I mean, you could easily deplete that in no time. Now, Herodotus says that there were only 197 total Athenian fatalities for the whole Battle of Marathon. Professor Blythe believed that, based on his experiments, that the Athenians may have had 175 injured hoplites, but no deaths during the charge. Now, that's an effective rate of fire of less than 1%. But remember, these tests that I'm talking about were never done with actual reenactors attacking or firing. Now, of course, that could be very hazardous, not only to your reenactors, but it could also be really tough on your insurance if you were actually using real weapons. At any rate, in 2009, we had another set of tests done. At the Austrasian Historical Conference, held in northwest of Sydney, Australia, 20 people in fully equipped Greek hoplite equipment, half in metal and half in linen leather armor, formed a phalanx, 5 men across, 4 men deep. They advanced over 150 meters of open field against 16 opposing archers. Now, the archers' bows were 30-pound pole, and they were using rubber-tipped arrows. Now, the arrow flight and the impact velocity was believed to be almost exactly the same as the arrows with metal heads. Each archer in the experiment fired 6 arrows each for a total of 96 total arrows being fired at the mini phalanx. This was repeated 7 times for a total of 672 arrows being fired at 20 men over the distance of the test. So we're getting a little more interesting. And in that article I talk about, they have photographs of this. For the Greek attackers, they did not charge or trot, but advanced slowly, which of course allowed for more shots to be fired at them. Each attack was made in a different formation to check effectiveness. One of them was shallower. One of them was deeper. One of them was in open order. One of them was in closed order, othimos. Once the hoplites stopped 15 meters away, they just let the archers fire as many rounds as they wanted. A hit was recorded when an arrow hit an unarmored part of the attacker. It was above the knee to the waist and the arms. Now, the face or throat. Now, the Corinthian-style helmet really left very little to hit. You even have the plume will also kind of deflect. And it's a little harder shooting straight at someone. Three hits were made during the entire experiment. So they fired all this. They got 3 hits. One hit an upper right arm. One in an upper right hand. One hit a left shin because that guy wasn't wearing a set of greaves. All of the rest of the arrows hit the shields, the sides of the helmets, or became entangled in the helmet crest, which is actually one of the purposes of the crest. So the working hypothesis of the 1977 test can be considered valid. So all the modern scholarship suggests that the charge at Marathon was required to limit the time of exposure to the Persian archery fire, and that can actually be either dismissed or revised. But certainly, it'd be tough to sell everybody on, let's just stand here and walk slowly. They'd want to go as fast as they could without wearing themselves out. So moving gradually, building up your pace, and then for that last charge, you're also going to increase the adrenaline pump of the enemy, because they fire their arrows and you keep coming, they fire their arrows and you keep coming, and so on and so on. And so, you know, they're going to get a little more concerned. They may slow down. One would expect them to speed up. But when they finally impact the Persian formation, they just have 2 rows of spearmen. Everybody else has a bow and arrow. So it's going to be an interesting thing when we move on, because we'll move into the next segment of talking about what happens when you get that impact and the difference in the armor and the difference in the equipment. So the sources for this is the Battle of Marathon book by Krentz. The Charge of Marathon, that's an article in the Classical Journal of 1976, page 339 to 343 by Dunlin and Thompson. A Storm of Spears, Understanding the Great Hoplite at War by Matthews. Testing Herodotus by Matthews, Ancient Warfare, Volume 4, Issue 4. And the special issue, Battle of Marathon by Ancient Warfare, that was done in 2011. So I hope you enjoyed that. I hope you come by my website, historyaccordingtobob.com or sumahistorica.com. Check out the CDs, check out the souvenirs. And if you like what we're doing, please feel free to support us. Thank you very much.